Hello everyone, welcome to our Future Melbourne Committee meeting. It is meeting number 20 on Tuesday the 21st of September 2021. A lot of 21s there. And this is a virtual meeting and we declare it open at 6 p.m. Thanks to everyone that's a part of the City of Melbourne management team, our councillors and all the members of the public who are joining us this evening. The City of Melbourne respectfully acknowledges the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people on whose land we are physically meeting tonight, and we pay respects to their elders past and present. We also respectfully acknowledge the Bunurong Boonwurrung, the Jaja Wurrung, the Tungurung and the Wathurrung as traditional custodians of the land on which we govern. We are committed to our reconciliation journey because at its heart, reconciliation is about strengthening relationships between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal peoples, and we believe this has a benefit for all Victorians. As part of our efforts to contain the spread of COVID-19 and pursuant to the provisions of sections 394 and 395 of the Local Government Act 2020, council and committee meetings will be held virtually until further notice. Until 26 April 2022, councils do not need to provide for members of the public to physically attend meetings. Providing public access to live streamed events satisfies our public attendance test during that prescribed period. That is why we are streaming live, and the video and audio recording will be made available on our council website by close of business tomorrow, and the unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will be made available on our website as soon as practicable. Can everybody please check their mobile phones are turned to silent or off for the duration of the meeting? Thank you very much. So here we are on the 21st of September, and the agenda this evening comprises six reports from management, one of which is confidential. And we have just one apology this evening from Councillor Leloux. I'm advising members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six members voting in favour of it, that decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. Councillors, I'm also asking you all please to be aware of any conflicts of interest this evening, whether it's a general or material conflict of interest as defined in the Local Government Act 2020. Can you please declare the nature and type of that interest prior to any relevant item to be considered this evening? Thank you. We are at the part where we're confirming the minutes of the previous meeting. I'm calling on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 19 that was held on 7 September 2021. I'm looking for a councillor to help me with that. Councillor Hakim and seconded by Councillor Griffiths. Thank you. I'm putting the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, please raise your hands. And that's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. I'm just double checking. I can see nine faces there. I can see all the hands up. Thank you. We've only had one. Am I not counting correct? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And we've only had one apology, so we should be able to see 10.
Councillor Louis not in.
Someone else missing.
Oh, Councillor Louis is not there yet. Sorry, excuse me, councillors. All right, we'll wait. We've only had one apology this evening from Councillor Leloux. Anyway, councillors, thank you for that agenda item three. We're moving on to say, councillors, were there any matters arising from those minutes that you would like to discuss at this point? No, thank you. Thank you for the head shake, Councillor Hakim. That's very helpful on Zooms. The following submissions have been received in accordance with the council's governance rules in relation to agenda item 6.1, which is planning permit application TP-2021-538, /B, which is 179 Boundary Road, North Melbourne. We've had requests to speak from John Gilmore and Aidan Robinson, who's from Pro Urban. We've also had items of correspondence from Tay Evans, Antoinette DeLuca, John Gilmore and Aidan Robinson from Pro Urban. In relation to agenda item 6.2, which is submission to the World Heritage Environs Area Draft Strategy Plan and Planning Scheme Amendment, we've had items of correspondence from Katie Roberts, B. McNicholas, who's from Walk-in St Kilda Road and Environs, and from Friends of Melbourne Observatory and from Friends of Faulkner Park, and Fiona Bell, who's the Deputy President, Protectors of Public Lands Victoria, Inc. In relation to agenda item 6.4, which is the Melbourne Maritime Heritage Precinct and Mission to Seafarers Feasibility and Business Case Final Report, we've had requests to speak from Martin Dixon, who is a director of the Melbourne Maritime Heritage Network, and we've also had a request to speak from Ross Brewer, Chairman, Offshore and Specialist Ships Australia. We've had items of correspondence from Martin Dixon, Ross Brewer, Neil Edwards AM, who is Chairman of the Mission to Seafarers, and also from Tim Bracker. Thank you. In relation to agenda item 6.5, the Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee, we've had items of correspondence from Susan Gould, Jessica Moyes, Chris Thrum, Louise Comboy and Chris Comboy. Thank you very much to everybody for your written submissions and your request to speak. For all of those who will be speaking this evening, you will be invited to address the committee as the relevant item is being considered. You have 3 minutes to address the committee. It is the intention to keep to the 3 minutes, and to assist you, you'll see a countdown timer appear on your screen, and a bell will go when 2 minutes are complete to let you know you have 1 minute left, and another bell at three. If you could please finalise your submissions at that time, it would be appreciated. We're moving to public questions, and as our regulars know, in accordance with the Council's governance rules, a 15-minute period is allowed at the start and at the end of each of our future Melbourne Committee meetings for the public to be able to ask questions. To enable the public to continue to do this whilst we're in the current restrictions, members of the public are asked to submit questions in writing or registered to ask a question by 10 o'clock on the Tuesdays that we meet. And I'm advising that as of 10 a.m. today, we had received no public questions. Thank you. Now, before we get into the agenda proper, I'm just going to check with councillors whether anybody wishes to discuss the confidential nature of the item listed as confidential in the public agenda this evening. All good there. Excellent. Thank you. Well, it's now my pleasure to call on the Deputy Lord Mayor, Nicholas Rees, who is Chair of our City Planning Portfolio, to take over as Chair of this part of the FMC. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. There are two reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio at this evening's FMC meeting. The first of those is Agenda Item 6.1, Planning Permit Application TP-2021-538/B for the property 179 Boundary Road, North Melbourne. I am conscious of the fact that we have received some 27 objections in relation to this item. So there has been some community interest. So I'm going to suggest that Larry Parsons gives councillors a short presentation so that we can fully avail ourselves of all relevant matters. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. The first slide, please. As stated, it's on the corner of Boundary Road and Racecourse Road, the pink area, very close to Flemington Station. Next slide. It is an existing 9-storey building, residential, with ground floor tenancies, and it was approved by the City of Moonee Valley because this area used to be in the City of Moonee Valley in 2008. So this is a planning scheme amendment for the tenancy on the ground floor, which has been used for a gymnasium and is now proposed to be used as an office, the office being a use as of right. So they are applying for a mezzanine floor and a waiver in parking. Next slide, please. he will see the ground floor is double height. So the tenancy is the one to the left, and the double height entry is the main door to the residential building, and the tenancy actually accesses off that lobby. You can see there's no direct access off the street. Next slide. The red line shows that it is a lot 12 of the certificate of title. There are no requirements on the title or on the planning permit about the use or linking of this tenancy. Next, please. This just shows the endorsed plans, which was the two double height spaces that along the curving frontage. Next. And here you'll see the proposal, which is basically an office building on two levels, with the second or upper level being the mezzanine, which is added, with a stairway added below the two lifts that you can see. The entry to the tenancy was from that lift area. It is now being moved too close to the front door. Otherwise, there are no other changes. There's no parking related to this. They are asking for a waiver from 5 spaces to 0. And next slide, yes. You'll see that's just a section through the double height entry, and to the left, the double height tenancy, which has been divided into two levels linked by an internal stair, and they will both still have a height, clear height of 2.7 metres minimum. Mm. And that ends the presentation.
Thank you very much for that, Larry. Any questions for Larry from councillors? No, okay. Thank you again, Larry, for that presentation. And I now call on John Gilmore, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. Welcome to Town Hall virtually, John. You're requested to speak for no more than 3 minutes.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Lord Mayor, for this opportunity. I'm a resident in the building and I am chair of the Owners Corporation. One clarification on that presentation. At the moment, the entrance to the area is not from the lift lobby. It is from the main foyer of the building. I want to make a couple of points. In making the decision regarding parking, I believe you have not considered that the original permit recognised that there would be internal use of the facility and therefore no parking was required at that time. The new proposal is for external users to access the space, and this has then got flow-on issues for traffic, illegal parking in Boundary Lane where ambulance access is a priority, and there is no provision in this building for drop-offs or deliveries. This creates chaos at times for residents of three buildings that use the single Boundary Lane as access to garages and so on. The second is the Owners Corporation has not been consulted at all in regard to this proposal. The assumption about access to the building waste services has not been tested with the Owners Corporation. And at the moment, the waste services are provided for residents, and this adds a commercial user to the existing service with no understanding as to what the expectation of waste disposal would be. The third comment, the proposal compromises access and security to the building. We have had problems with thefts from letterboxes and with non-resident access to this area on a regular basis. Security is further compromised. And finally, on behalf of the Owners Corporation, we have a series of questions about the assumption in the design of being able to modify the feature walls in the common area of the foyer. And this has all occurred without any consultation or communication with us. In fact, the Owners Corporation is very open to the continuance of the space as a gym. There have been some difficulties in negotiating that, and we would welcome that continuing on. My understanding is that under present-day planning guidelines, such recreational space for residents in a multi-storey building would be an expectation, and residents believe that they are losing this recreational space. So in summary, we disagree with the waiver of parking. We disagree with the open access to the waste service, and we disagree with the change of user space. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee.
Thank you, John, for that submission. Larry, if you're still with us, I would be interested to get your response to some of the points raised by John, in particular the points made about parking. I seem to recollect that there have been some changes to the title regarding parking on this property since 2008. And more specifically, I guess I'm interested in your response to John's points around about parking being linked to the original permit and the use of the space in question this evening. And then secondly, I'm interested in your views about if there's anything in the planning scheme which goes to the feature walls in the common area identified by John as well.
To start with the owner's corporation permission, we recognise that it is likely that owner's corporation permission will be needed for these works, including the change to the entry and the wall. The permit actually includes a note suggesting that they need to assess the owner's corporation permission. Rightly or wrongly, the planning scheme does not let us sort of consider that as a priority issue before we assess the planning permit. So it is a separate issue with the owner's corporation, which we totally appreciate has to be resolved. So that is the access issues. It's also to some extent the waste issues. Our waste team has approved the waste management plan. We understand from the applicant that they do pay owners' corporation fees, which give them access to waste disposal, but that is to be determined, as I've said. In terms of parking, we have assessed the use as an office as we would today for an office use, and according to council's policy, which favours reduction or minimisation of private parking when the site is very close to public transport, and there are a lot of options here. The laneway beside the building is, I understand it, a council laneway, and it has controls and it has signs and can be enforced by council. And so any sort of abuse of that would need to be enforced as with any other user, be they the office or residence or whoever. I think that's covered all the points, or the main points.
Yeah, I think it has. Thank you very much for that, Larry. I now call on Aidan Robinson from Pro Urban, again, to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Welcome, Aidan.
Thank you very much, Chairman and councillors. Let me start by thanking you for the opportunity to address the committee this evening. I'm here in the capacity as a town planner on behalf of the applicant who is seeking approval for the development of an office at lot 12S or S12 at 179 Boundary Road in North Melbourne. Project provides an exciting opportunity to reinvigorate the frontage of the building while increasing employment opportunities in accordance with the provisions of the relevant planning policy. Overall, we've read the officer report and we support the recommendation in full. In terms of planning merits, I guess overall, I don't want to go through this in huge amount of detail in the time, but we consider the proposal is appropriate within its context and will complement the existing uses of the building and the surrounding area and will lead to positive social and economic outcomes. Noting, as Larry did, the use of the land for an office does not require a permit in this zone. In relation to car parking, the application requires a waiver of 5 spaces for the new use, and we consider this as a really acceptable outcome in this context, as Larry noted, in terms of the policy of suppression of private car spaces, and given the proximity of trains within about 50 metres, trams within about 50 metres, trains within 200 metres of the site, it's a very small tenancy, so it's not going to have a huge amount of people in there in any sense. It's a tightly controlled nature of parking on street nearby. There's availability of bike spaces within the building, and there's also car share facilities within about 500 metres of the site as well. So that ensures that the waiver will not have an impact on the surrounding network. Next, I just want to talk to some of the objections that were raised. In terms of the owner's court or lease arrangements for this allotment, this allotment is very much privately owned. It's not common property. The use of the actual site doesn't require approval of the owner's corp. There may be some technicalities around changes to the lobby area that may, and we'll have to investigate those as we move forward. But in terms of the leases on the land, it's noted that the owner's corporations have either asked for an early release from the current arrangement or agreement and or have failed to exercise their right to extend or renew the lease for that part of the land. So therefore, we have the right to propose as the applicant or to propose to it or apply for an alternate use of the land. In terms of waste, as noted, the application's included a waste management assessment which concludes the existing facilities are capable of accommodating the additional waste. And we understand that's acceptable to council, and as well that the OC fees are already being paid by the applicant for this allotment. In terms of car parking a little bit further, we note that the existing car spaces on the site won't be impacted. We don't propose to use them. We don't propose to use visitor spaces, and the access will therefore be uninterrupted as we will not be accessing the site. In terms of building security, we actually think that the change will be a really big improvement for the area. It will create an active use at the frontage. It will have more people coming to the site, which generally is a supported positive impact for the safety of the surrounding areas. Look, that brings me to the end of the submission. Thank you again, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Aidan. Right on time. Any questions from councillors? All right. In that case, Aidan, we thank you very much for your submission this evening. To council officers, could we please bring up a motion on the screen, which I proposing to move once I confirm that is the correct one? Yes, it is. And I'm looking for a councillor to second it. Thank you, Councillor Beppert. Look, as we have heard in the submissions this evening, this site is located within a commercial one zone and it is not affected by any overlays. It is previously formed part of the City of Moonee Valley, and it was the City of Moonee Valley who issued the original permit for the 9-storey residential building back in 2008. We did receive a total of 27 objections, and so, John Gilmore, I do want you to know that councillors have looked at this matter very carefully. Personally, been involved in several meetings about it and actually walked Boundary Road on my weekend walk to have a good look for myself. I've looked through the submissions from objectives, and I did note that many of them did seem to have an understanding that the use of the tenancy as a gymnasium was an associated communal use for the host building. Unfortunately, there is nothing in the title or a permit condition which makes that a permanent arrangement, at least under the title or permit conditions. A second line of objection, which John touched upon as well, was the conditions relating to parking and potential issues raised by drop-off on the street and the reduction in statutory car parking requirements from 5 to 0. But as we have heard, this is a reasonable move and is consistent with broader City of Melbourne policy. This is a challenging matter, I've got to say. If I was living in this building and I was a user of this gym, I would, you know, not like to see it go. I completely understand why we have received the 27 objections. But it is the case that under the planning law, and that's what we're here tonight talking about, how the planning law applies to this matter, the proposed development is consistent with the purpose of commercial one zone and would not result in any unreasonable amenity impacts. And as I've said, the waiver of the car spaces is considered appropriate for the use in this location, particularly noting the considerable public transport options in close proximity. So, look, rightly or wrongly, the planning provisions cannot assist in this matter, although, as has been flagged once or twice already this evening, it's still open to the applicant to seek owners' corporation approval for change of the location of the door, and the tenants in the building, using the mechanisms available to them under owners' corporation law, could potentially still have an avenue available to them to see this continue as a gymnasium, or at least have a negotiation with the property owner about that matter. But as for the planning law, it's pretty clear this is a planning permit application which should be granted. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. I agree. It's regrettable that the Owners Corp and the developer VMR have fallen out, and whatever the reason for that breakdown in the relationship has no bearing on the planning decision. The car parking waiver should be granted given the location of this site right near Flemington Bridge Station and two tram lines, and the planning permit decision itself is very simple. I wish the residents of the building well in their quest through any other legal avenues they have to resolve their issues, but the decision before us today cannot take those extraneous issues into account. They do have my sympathies. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Lippitt. Do any other councillors wish to speak for or against the motion? In that case, I'll put the matter to a vote. All councillors in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor, yep, I declare that carried unanimously. Thank you very much. The next agenda item before us is 6.2, submissions to the World Heritage Environs Area, draft strategy plan and planning scheme amendment. Would councillors like a presentation in regards to this item? I'll take that as a no. I call on a councillor to move a motion. Thank you, Councillor Leppett, and I will second that motion. Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor, for seconding the motion. This motion supports the recommendation from management with a few changes, but first of all, let's remind ourselves what this is. There's an obligation under the Heritage Act for Heritage Victoria and ultimately the Heritage Council to recommend any changes to the World Heritage Environs controls to make sure that we in the Victorian governance system are upholding our duty to make sure that the World Heritage site of the Royal Exhibition Building in Carlton Gardens is managed well. That's a really important process. The City of Melbourne is leading the Carlton Gardens Master Plan review. We're on the steering group that looks at all the other documents that are subsidiary to the World Heritage Management Plan. And this is an incredibly important part of the suite of documents. What Heritage Victoria, through this report by Hanson, are recommending directly to the Heritage Council is a large number of very significant changes to policies and controls in the Melbourne and Yarra planning schemes. And of course, we're focusing on the Melbourne planning scheme only today. I support the lion's share of those recommendations, and I support the lion's share of what our officers' commentary on those recommendations are. There are a few issues that I think are worth highlighting here, and they are also the subject of the motion that I've moved. Heritage Victoria has taken a purist heritage view, and As the heritage portfolio holder at the City of Melbourne, I obviously welcome that. But as custodians of the planning system at the City of Melbourne, we have to acknowledge that there has not been an economic analysis of some of the proposals that are being put forward by Heritage Victoria and their impact on some of the land in the environs of the World Heritage Site. So we need to be very clear that where we're advocating for mandatory height controls in DDO 6, we're only talking about land that is visible to and from the Royal Exhibition Building, so land abutting Rathdown Street. We're not talking about land that cannot possibly have a material impact on the World Heritage values. Where we're talking about, this motion also talks about not pursuing unnecessary controls. And if we scroll down, we can look at the full part of the motion as well. We shouldn't be pursuing controls that are unnecessary. So the residential zones to the north of Carlton Gardens already have mandatory height limits in them. If a future planning minister decides to reform the zones through the Victoria planning provisions, and you know, a metre is added or a metre is subtracted or whatever it happens to be, it is quite excessive for us to agree that all of those hundreds of properties that are shielded in view from the Royal Exhibition Building by properties along Carlton Street must forevermore be at a particular height, even though that has no bearing whatsoever on the World Heritage values of the site. So I think there are some recommendations that Heritage Victoria are putting forward that are an overreach and that we need to resist. That might be a surprising view to be putting forward, but I do think that as the council, we cannot only take the purest heritage view, we also need to consider the economic impacts of such proposals. And the economic impacts of unnecessary planning permit triggers is a significant impost, a financial burden on landowners, even those who want to make very modest changes to properties. And if these properties are out of view of the Royal Exhibition Building, then we need to acknowledge that this is a little bit too far a step for the Heritage Victoria to be recommending. I close by making the point that it's all well and good to try and protect views from the forecourt of the Melbourne Museum over the Royal Exhibition Building to the city, but there's an entire city there, and we cannot act on one heritage-based recommendation alone from one standpoint with one camera shot to decide the basis of building heights for an entire city block, and also use that view-based analysis to determine that an entire section of Carlton should have mandatory controls added to it as well, when you cannot see the Royal Exhibition Building from certain parts of Carlton because someone built the Melbourne Museum in the middle of that view. We have to be realistic about what is proposed. I close by arguing that we do support the lion's share of what is proposed here. We are strongly supporting an extension of the WIA boundary, an extension of overlays, and an extension of regional policy in the Melbourne and Yarra planning schemes, which, if adopted by the Heritage Council and adopted by the Planning Minister, will result in a much stronger planning framework. But we just can't go as far as supporting unnecessary planning controls, because that is an overreach. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Leppett. I will add to those comments by saying that the Royal Exhibition Buildings are indeed Melbourne's only World Heritage listed site, and it is, I think, almost impossible to overstate the importance of the building and the heritage gardens around it to the people of Melbourne. While we have been in this period of lockdown, the $20 million upgrade of the dome has occurred, such that when we get our freedom back, one of the many new things that will exist for Melburnians to enjoy is visiting the Dome and viewing the magnificent views that are offered from the new renovated viewing platform of Carlton and the surrounding areas. And so I think that is something for Melburnians to all look forward to. And it's a reminder of how important it is that we have these protections in place. A lot has changed in Melbourne since the original World Heritage and related planning controls were put in place. So this review is timely. Melbourne is a growing city. It's a city under development application pressure. And so it's appropriate that this review is occurring. I think the City of Melbourne has done a very good job with this submission. I commend Councillor Leppett for the further additional amendments made to the resolution before us, the motion before us this evening. We look forward to the Victorian government taking all these matters into account in finally determining what form those new controls will take. Are there any other councillors who would like to speak for or against this matter? All right, well, I look forward to seeing you all at that viewing platform when Melburnians can do so. I'll now put the matter to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Declare that carried unanimously. I now call on the Lord Mayor to resume the role of Chair for the remainder of the meeting.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. We are moving on to agenda item 6.3, which is creating communities of equality and respect, prevention of violence against women, action plan 2021 to 2024. I'm looking to see if anybody has a conflict. No, thank you. Would anybody like a presentation on this item? No, thank you. I'm calling on a councillor to move this motion. Councillor Dr. Olivia Ball, thank you. And I'm calling on a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Hakim, thank you very much. Over to you, Councillor Dr. Olivia Ball.
Thank you very much. I'd like to begin by acknowledging anyone present online who is or has experienced family or domestic violence or violence of any kind, gendered violence of any kind. It's important to acknowledge because very frequently this violence, with this report, deals with public violence but also violence occurring behind closed doors and in secret. So we must acknowledge those among us who have or are experiencing fear, controlling behaviour or violence in their home, and I hope you will all join with me in condemning it and acknowledging that it is a human right to be free of violence and coercive control. This plan before us deals with gendered forms of violence and is Council's immediate term response to this scourge. We must acknowledge that this human rights violation that we seek to remedy is serious and profound, and nationally about approximately one woman is
recording stopped
every week by a partner or former partner, and sometimes children and young people also lose their lives. This plan is before us, I commend to you for a number of reasons. One is its clear and evidence-based connection of gendered violence with gender inequality, and that it is gender inequality that gives rise to gendered violence and also perpetuates and protects it when it occurs. If we took both of these problems seriously, we can and must end gendered violence. I also commend this plan and thank all those who have worked on it for its drawing on the intersectionality of the experience of gendered violence, and that the experience of people who have other attributes that intersect with gender experience violence and access to supports and remedies for violence differently, and it takes that into account. It also is only at this stage a one-year plan, the idea being that under current conditions, it's best to plan for the COVID circumstances in which we find ourselves and the limitations that are possible. And then after 12 months, we will review that. The plan has seeks to end four kinds of gender inequality that contribute to gendered violence, namely condoning or accepting violence against women, men's controlling behaviour, whether it's controlling decision-making or independence of women, rigid gender roles and stereotypes of masculinity and femininity, and peer relations amongst men and boys that emphasises aggression and disrespect. We need to acknowledge that COVID has increased gender inequality and has increased domestic violence. There's a number of ways in which this has occurred. We know that women have lost, we're more likely to lose their jobs and more likely to lose hours of work, therefore loss of income. They've we also been more likely to draw on their superannuation, therefore their future is less secure. They have also been less able to access the income support that has been available in certain limited sectors. So women are also, if they are experiencing violence or control under lockdown circumstances, are a greater danger and have needed greater support. And we see this in evidence in the demand for services and support. So we want to ask the community to provide feedback. This plan will be going out for community engagement for this first 12-month plan, and then further engagement is welcomed thereafter. I'm sorry, there's one other thing I've forgotten I was going to say. I beg your pardon. Anyway, that's fine. Thank you very much, Jamal, if you would care to second the motion.
Thanks. Thanks, Councillor Dr. Olivia Ball. We are going to you, Councillor Hakim, as a seconder. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Dr. Ball, for your words and putting the motion forward. I'd also like to extend thank yous just to the team, to Linda Alley and the team, for the work you've done in putting this together. It is great to see work that is active action towards preventing violence against women in this plan. What we are talking about is a plan that's followed significant action from the City of Melbourne over time and towards creating those communities of equality and respect. Just want to add a couple of things, and I'll try not to duplicate too much, as Councillor Ball has provided a strong background to this, and do want to kind of share, as stated in our commitment in this. If you've read it, we know that critically, family violence can be prevented and eliminated, and that gender inequality is one and is the underlying driver for the prevention of violence against women and other people experiencing intimate violence. So every person, every government, every organisation, every group has a part to play in driving prevention of violence against women. It is also important to acknowledge, as Councillor Dr. Ball said, that gender-based violence has intersectionality to it. And I'd like to commend the team on the work here, working very closely with organisations like OurWatch, who lead the conversation and have done so much work in this space. Is critical, so that we are also working with the latest thought leaders and the evidence is there. And you can see that throughout the document. Ultimately, equality and respect is critical to creating communities, and that's something that our communities should have as a baseline. And we must not only strive for it, we must also deliver it in action. And I think this is one of those active steps towards it. So it's really great to see that in the plan. I want to celebrate for a moment just that work we are doing for ending period poverty as part of this and the role that plays in supporting participation in all the things needed to drive that economic impact. It's one of those drivers. It's something that I, again, want to urge any other municipalities and councils across the country to consider and deliver their own program. But it's one way of showing an active way that can demonstrate how we can deliver in this area. Another area I do want to speak to just really briefly and to add to is the importance of men and boys speaking up. Let me say this, violence against women is not on. It is not okay. It is never okay. Speaking up, speaking about, and talking about it shifts those norms of masculinity and intersection with condoning violence. That's something that we need to talk about. And groups such as Man Cave are doing it as well and doing a great job in this space. And we can have to continue this conversation across all spaces. And men and boys have a responsibility to be part of the solution, to be driving that as well. Because the impact is serious, and you can see those in the report, but it is serious. And ultimately, gender inequality, that means leads to one murder a week. That's not just a statistic. That's something that we have seen here in Melbourne. It's people we know, it's people we love, it's people in our communities, and it is not one. So ultimately, gender equality is the road to enabling prevention of violence against women. If you haven't read the plan, I urge you to have a look and please provide that feedback. It is really critical as part of this plan and the next step and those active steps that we are taking over the next 12 months and we will continue to take as we build. It's great to see the number of organizations we're partnering with in the plan and who form such an important part of driving this critical area. There's never, I want to acknowledge, there's never enough funding here. And it's an area that intersects in so many ways, in so many women's lives, and we must deliver change. So to just close off, I am going to just quote OurWatch in what the conversation has been going about is let's change the story. Each one of us has a part to play in that. And this is one part that we at the City of Melbourne are doing to change the story. I put the motion to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Hakim. Is there anybody else that would like to speak to this motion at this point? I'm going to speak to the motion. I'm going to say thank you very much to our team, both in terms of our officers and also to our councillors who lead on this portfolio. Councillor Ball and Councillor Hakim, thank you very much to everyone. This is such an important, not just an important topic, it's an important issue and an important outcome. And the fact that we have violence against women or violence against anyone in our society, but in this case, violence against women is completely unacceptable. Both Councillor Dr. Ball and Councillor Hakim have outlined the action plan, the ways in which we want to implement programs to seek incredibly worthwhile outcomes. And so I'm not going to go back over those, but I did want to say that I do appreciate the thoughtfulness and the leadership that's gone into the elements of the action plan. I do want to note that the initiatives are based on meaningful change. And at the end of the day, we need to put in every effort we possibly can to see a positive difference made on these issues, which are a blight on our community at every layer and really impact so many of the aspirations that we have for our city. I'll certainly be putting all of my efforts into supporting the plan as it comes back to us in final form following community input, and I really encourage everybody else to take an active interest in important plans like this to make a big difference, positive difference in our community. And for those reasons, I'll be supporting this initiative, this motion this evening, and everything that is to come afterwards. If there are no further speakers, I'll put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. It's unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you. Agenda item 6.4 is the Melbourne Maritime Heritage Precinct admission to seafarers, feasibility and business case final report. Councillors, would anybody like a presentation on this item? No, thank you. Then I'm going to call on Martin Dixon, who is the director of the Melbourne Maritime Heritage Network, who's requested an opportunity to address the committee. And Martin, I'm hoping that you are there and ready to go.
I certainly am. Thank you, Lord Mayor. And to you and the councillors, thanks for the opportunity to make this brief submission. The Melbourne Maritime Heritage Network urges councillors to support the management recommendations, and we support the prudent fiscal approach in the recommendations regarding the redevelopment of the mission to seafarers. And we certainly recognise the building is a state government asset and also a state government responsibility, therefore. And we're pleased that the study acknowledges the unique heritage status of the mission to seafarers. And we're also pleased that it recognises the opportunity to elevate the status of maritime heritage in Melbourne, a really important and sometimes forgotten part of the Melbourne story. And what's particularly pleasing in the recommendations is to create a maritime precinct along with Green Line, Seafarers Rest Park, and the Mission to Seafarers. And we would like to make the point that that in our mind, this heritage precinct extends from Birrarung Mar right along the river and should really incorporate all of the Victoria Harbour precinct right around to Ron Barassi Senior Park. The reference to the establishment of a Maritime Experience Centre in Victoria Harbour is very, very welcome, because we believe that such a centre would help the community and tourists to understand the breadth of the maritime endeavour here in Melbourne, the past, its present, and also its future. As the lead, one of the directors, and as the lead of the network's tourism special advisory group, I'm really excited about the study's recommendations. The entire maritime precinct, the Maritime Experience Centre, and the planned ferry terminal will, in my mind, provide a real and an urgently needed activation and reactivation of the Docklands area. So once again, thank you. We support the recommendations. We support where this is going, and we look forward to working with Council in the future on this. And thank you for the opportunity to make this submission.
Thank you, Martin. Thanks for being involved in our virtual meeting this evening. And for your presentation and enthusiasm for the precinct. I'm going to call now on Ross Brewer, who is the Chairman Offshore and Specialist Ships Australia. Ross, it's your turn to present to the committee.
Good. Thank you very much, Lord Mayor. I'd echo everything that Martin Dixon has said there. He's, I think, summed up a lot of this very, very well. This building is iconic. Melbourne has a real treasure here. Through its doors, there would be tens of thousands of seafarers that have passed through there over the 100 years of operation plus. The combination of the building and the seafarers is something that Melbourne has to have a lot of pleasure in and a lot of pride in. And this paper goes a long way to supporting this development well into the future. I acknowledge that it needs support coming out of the Victorian government to do it. But the way that this will lead into a maritime precinct, it's a gateway to what can be a really great place for Melbourne to have. The development of the Green Line, which I commend, I think that's a great initiative with good maritime artifacts spread all around with great signage. Now, leading through to Victoria Harbour, the old Victorian docks, is just something that the rest of the world would give their eye teeth to have something as well as we have it here. OSSA has been based in the building now for the past 5 years. We've operated out of there. Our Australian operations are there. The building is tired. It's great to be there, but it does need doing up. The adjacent Seafarers Park Rest, when that comes to pass, and with this together, will be just something stunning for Melbourne. It's going to draw people to it. It will be something that, combined with ferries and the water transport that we use our waterways for in the future, so many other cities will just give their eye teeth for this. So I commend the paper to you all, councillors. I hope you've read our submission. It is something that is really going to enhance this area of Docklands and will be a great boon for the future. That's all I have to say. So, again, thank you for the opportunity of speaking. Great paper. Well done. And I hope all councillors will give it support. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Ross, and thanks for your commitment to the sector and the precinct as well. Great to hear from you. Well, I am pleased at this time we could see the motion on the screen. There it is. Thank you very much. To look to a councillor to move this motion this evening. Councillor Lippitt, thank you, and a councillor to second the motion, and I'm going to do that this evening, and I'm really delighted to do that. So over to you, Councillor Lippitt.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you to Martin Dixon and Ross Brewer for those enthusiastic submissions, and I agree, and I'm delighted to be supporting this motion tonight. We wouldn't be here without the advocacy of your two networks and Melbourne City Councillors who are returning City Councillors will, of course, know of the political efforts of the Melbourne Maritime Heritage Network and the great work of our former colleague, Councillor Watts. And we wouldn't be here without people bringing this to us, advocating for it. And I want to thank our CEO, Justin Haney, and others as well for proposing the business case and for proposing these explorations that we're considering the outcomes of tonight, because our submitters are right. This is a really special building and this is a really special precinct. And we are sitting on something so magical that is under-realised in terms of its tourism potential, in terms of its economic potential, but just that layer of history that Melbourne can tell, that maritime story that is known to many but could be known to so many more. And it's not just a post-contact heritage. It goes back tens of thousands of years, and it is something that government could do a lot more to interpret and celebrate. And so that's what this exercise has done. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the Mission to Seafarers building itself, we're finding that it is not large enough for a standalone maritime museum itself. Some of the stronger recommendations out of the exercise that we've taken here is that this precinct as a trail concept has a lot of legs, and we'd like to keep exploring that. But there's been a lot of difficulty in finding a future use of the Seafarers building that can also ensure that its upkeep is looked after. And we know that, and we're not in a position, unfortunately, to weigh in and provide that support here and now. But I do hope a whole of government approach that carefully considers the future of the building and that can clearly have a plan in place that includes the Victorian government contributing to the funding of the upkeep of that building, will see that building be the centrepiece of this precinct as a trail concept that we might be developing going forward. So there's so many beautiful ideas coming through here that we're going to investigate further. But I'll finish where I ended by thanking everyone through the Maritime Heritage Networks, all of them, for continuing to push for government at all levels to better celebrate and interpret the fantastic maritime heritage that is under-realised throughout the Docklands and along the river. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Lippert, and thank you for your interest, as always, in heritage items and leadership on those within Council. I want to say thanks as well to Graham Porteous, who's put in a huge effort with all of the stakeholders and bringing this work together into consideration at Council this evening and has been really dedicated to finding some great ways forward, ways in which we can better reflect our maritime heritage within the City of Melbourne. I'm really pleased to second this motion this evening. It is about progressing the feasibility study for the precinct. I'm particularly passionate in that it is an integral part of the Green Line plans for rejuvenating 4 kilometres of what is currently mostly neglected but incredibly valuable space and land along the north bank of the Yarra from Birrarung Mar to the Balti. I'm really excited that Green Line and this project gives us an ability to bring so many stories that are integral, as Councillor Lippert so eloquently said, to our ancient history, to our more recent history. And it's those sorts of stories and the ability through projects like this to build a narrative that have value, not just for locals, but once our interstate and international borders open again for good, to really draw people in and captivate them. I think that's going to be a key driver of activity as we move into the future. So thank you to everybody involved. I'm really pleased that so far this project has found very strong, broad community support as well, and I'm sure that will continue as we progress through the steps that lie ahead. We'll continue also our engagement with the Victorian government on this important precinct. So for those reasons, I'm happy to propose, or to second, I should say, and I'm looking to see if anybody else would like to speak to this motion. Councillor Hakim.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I just wanted to put in a few brief words because I have quite an interest in the maritime and in everything that comes on our waters in particular. I've had a history with it, and I want to thank everyone who's worked on this. Thank Councillor Lippert and yourself, Lord Mayor, for your words. I've had a little bit to do with the mission of Seafarers over time, and I want to just acknowledge the important work that they also do and the continued provision of welfare they do to seafarers as well to this day. So it's an area that if you haven't had a chance to visit the mission to seafarers and learn about that, it's something that is really interesting and important part of our history in Melbourne, and something that is, I think, a bit of a hidden part of Melbourne, again, like many things, like our hidden bars, which one day will come back very soon. I also do want to quickly acknowledge the First Nations maritime, importantly, and how this plays a part between this and Green Line and all that we are doing. That connection to the Birrarung is so important. There is a long history that we must acknowledge here, and I think it has a big part to play as part of this continuous maritime history, and importantly, how this all interplays with Docklands as the water gateway to Melbourne, and something that has so much to offer into the future. And I think, and I look forward to as we build a really strong Docklands as well. So I'll be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Hakim. Are there any other speakers to this motion? All those in favour, please raise your hands. That's unanimous. So we declare that motion carried as well, unanimously as well. We're up to agenda item 6.5, Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee. Councillors, would anybody like a presentation on this item? No, I'm looking to a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Campbell, thanks. And a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Chang, thank you very much. Over to you, Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Lord Mayor, this motion responds to the concerns of businesses across the City of Melbourne that have been crippled by these six lockdowns, some of whom have been unable to trade for more than 230 days now. It responds to the concerns and a call for action from industry leaders that sit on our Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee, and I want to thank them for their leadership on this issue, but also concerns that I have heard widely from across businesses in Melbourne. This motion is about ensuring that our city can open safely, but open sooner and with fewer restrictions. Over the past few weeks, and particularly over the past few days since the release of the state government's roadmap, I have heard from business owners who are on the edge, who are at breaking point. Some of those are small business owners who've taken out loans, mortgaged homes, and whose debts are increasing each week that they cannot trade. They want hope and they want to be part of the solution. They don't want handouts. They just want the dignity of being able to work again. And that means that we need a safe path that allows them to open in a way that is viable and as soon as possible. And whether we like it or not, the Premier has made clear that vaccinated status is a requirement being imposed by this state government in its reopening plan. He's also made clear that pilots of vaccine passports will shortly be introduced. And noting that that is the case, this motion endorses the City of Melbourne advocating to be part of an opt-in pilot that would enable reopening of businesses that opt in as soon as possible, that ensures the safety of staff and patrons while also facilitating trade at as close to normal density as possible. And to be very clear, the statement proposed by our Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee seeks that vaccine passports be a temporary measure, required only until such time as National Cabinet endorsed vaccination targets are reached. That's a view that I've also heard expressed by businesses, and indeed concern about vaccination passports becoming permanent has been echoed in the public submissions we've received in relation to this motion tonight. And it's a view that I share, because we cannot permanently create a two-tier society or economy. Once we reach our vaccination targets, proof of double vaccination cannot be the price of entry to venues, but it can be a temporary ticket if it means that our city opens sooner with fewer restrictions and density limits. This is a motion led by feedback from industry. And what they've told me is that they don't feel their concerns have been heard in the development of the roadmap that was released this weekend. I want to thank firstly our Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee members, who are comprised of industry leaders from retail, hospitality, creative and events industries, for their leadership on this issue and their expertise in developing this statement. but I also want to thank the businesses from across the municipality who have contacted me and other councillors in recent days with their concerns about the roadmap, their call for action, and expressing a desire to be part of this opt-in trial. Businesses from a variety of industries, not just the nighttime economy. And what they've told me is the reason they want to be part of this trial, the reason they want the City of Melbourne to be part of a pilot, is because they want and indeed need to open sooner. They want a path to remove restrictions as soon as possible, including those on indoor dining and indoor retail, because for so many of them, outdoor dining and only outdoor retail is simply unworkable and would lead to nothing more but further weeks of losses for businesses that have already been hit so hard. And they've said they want to be part of a pilot because they want to be part of the solution. They want to identify the problems in a vaccine passport before it's rolled out more widely and identify ways in which it could be introduced in a streamlined fashion that minimises a burden on business and those that have to check vaccinated status. And critically, they want a chance to be heard by this state government, to be at the decision-making table and to have some hope for the future. For those reasons, I commend this motion.
Thanks, Councillor Campbell. Over to you. Well, actually, before I go, I just wanted to check, Councillor Campbell, that the motion that we see on the screen is the motion that you are proposing.
That's correct, Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Campbell. And moving to you as seconder, Councillor Chang.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Campbell, for putting forward this motion. I want to thank the members of the Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee for their hard work. A lot of industry leaders who are also going through tough times right now with their venues closed for more than 200 days, volunteering their time to help us and work out the best strategies forward to reopening Melbourne. As a small business owner, I am feeling with all the other small business owners in the city that we're probably the worst affected city in the country in regards to lockdowns, and we're all eager to reopen in the safest possible way in accordance to the roadmap that we can. And another 6 weeks of lockdown is really, you know, devastating all of us. And that's what we're hoping for at the moment. I think the roadmap has given a small amount of certainty, but in the end, we're not sure whether, you know, it's going to be 6 weeks or another 8 weeks or 10 weeks. And anything right now to help us reopen in any sort of measure would, assist, because a lot will not be able to hold on for the next 6 weeks. I think the past few weeks have shown a lot of big venues and restaurants that we know and frequent have shut down permanently. And that's because of this uncertainty. And I think that's what's driving the madness and mental health issues with business owners right now. And that is, how much longer can I hold on? And this pilot program will hopefully allow City of Melbourne businesses to try to get back on their feet. And as Councillor Campbell said, it's only during the pilot program where this vaccine passport will be in effect until the vaccination rates have hit what needs to hit according to the national roadmap. So I'm 100% for this motion, because I know struggling businesses need a glimmer of hope, especially in the CBD right now, because especially over the next 2 weeks where there won't be any construction workers, they were some of the last people left frequenting cafes, buying their coffees, buying lunch for takeaway. And, you know, they're such an integral part of our economy. And it's so disheartening to see that it'll be shut down for 2 weeks. You know, a measure, of course, we need to undertake to ensure that we can hit the right vaccination rates and stop COVID in its feet. But, you know, this is just denting us even further, all the small businesses in the city. So hopefully the state government does listen to us and other small businesses out there and members of the Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee and really take this into serious consideration. So I'm very happy to commend this motion. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Chang. Other speakers to this motion this evening? Councillor Dr. Ball?
Thank you. It's perhaps relevant in this context to mention that I'm not a medical doctor, but I am a former health professional and I have a science degree and training in statistics. And I've spent some time with the Doherty modelling and the Burnett modelling. I want to thank Councillor Campbell and Councillor Chang for the amendment to the first clause. Just to be clear, because the motion as originally drafted preceded, of course, the roadmap that we had presented to us on Sunday, and that is a very vital context to any motion that we consider tonight. So that acknowledges that. It remains, looking at the modelling, that if we were to stay in lockdown, which no one is proposing, but if we were to stay in lockdown, the current increase in daily new cases looks very much like this spire behind me. We will be tripling what we have now in a matter of weeks. And what the Burnett Institute has modelled is that without ending lockdown, we have a 24% chance of exceeding hospital capacity. And we know that if we overwhelm hospital capacity, that is when not only people with COVID cannot get the treatment they need and are at greater risk of dying, but everybody else in the health system cannot get the treatment that they need, because our hospitals are full and our hardworking health staff are overwhelmed. There's a 24% chance of that happening if we stay in lockdown. If we adopt the roadmap, which the state government has laid out, the chances of overwhelming our health system more than doubles to 63%. There is no easy solution, and wishing it were different, heaven knows we all wish it were different, but we cannot wish away this pandemic. So I think, given a huge amount of research that has gone into providing the best public health advice, we need to be cautious and planned and evidence-based in all of our responses. And I am willing to support a pilot in the City of Melbourne and that request on that basis, and that the pilot occurs within a time frame and other parameters. And there are many, many variables that go into this modelling: the number of people, the different, you know, the efficacy of the different types of vaccine, whether their efficacy drops off over time, density, and all those other sorts of huge number of variables. It's incredibly complex that all of the best health advice goes into this pilot there will be a pilot if it occurs in the City of Melbourne. And on that basis, I can support this motion. Thank you. And thank you to the Nighttime Economy Committee for their work in advising us.
Thanks, Councillor Dr. Ball. I am looking to see if there are any other speakers to this motion. Councillor Hakim.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'd like to also thank Councillor Campbell and Chang for moving the motion, and Councillor Dr. Ball as well for your words and for sharing with us. It's really important. I want to first just acknowledge and thank the Nighttime Economic Advisory Committee as well for their time and work. I know that every single advisory committee is important and provides council with insights that can only come from those subject matter experts, from those industry experts and representatives. And we have a broad view and look at things broadly, and those intersections of issues, and that all forms part of our responsibilities. But being able to get that insight is really critical. And this is the first report from this new committee. So I thought it was important to take the time to thank you, and also extend that thanks and appreciation. The item this evening has obviously attracted a great deal of discussion, and quite rightly so, as this is an environment of considerable and challenge and change that's happening, not just with the pandemic, but with our pathway out. I know so many are watching how New South Wales and Victoria drive the bus into the new normal and how we get through this. I think both Gladys and Dan have a great deal of responsibility and accountability during this time, and they really do have that unenviable position for driving the bus with the best available information and evidence to them. As Councillor Dr. Ball also shared earlier, it's not easy. So I think one thing to raise and critical to all of this conversation is we need to recognise that funding ultimately for health systems, so that we're able to meet these challenges of pandemics and infectious diseases into the future in a way that means we don't have lockdowns and that we can continue to work and live a life within a new thriving environment, is really critical. So that's something I think that goes without saying, but really important for us to continue to remember, because it is those times when these things disappear that we forget about this. History tells us that, but we know that this will continue into the future, and we can all agree that continued lockdowns are not a way for us to live, and it's not something that we'll do forevermore. So we need to use the evidence, we need to use best health advice to move out of this. I do also want to recognise just briefly as well, I know Councillor Campbell and Councillor Chang shared with us so much around the impact that these lockdowns have had on our communities in particular, and in particular in Docklands and in the CBD. It's had so many impacts on our residents and traders in our environment here at the City of Melbourne. And we must do everything we can to be supportive in frameworks that are reopened safely, and to be able to be part of any initiative with state government that means that we can support rebuilding Melbourne. And that's really important, making a difference. So this motion basically asks us to endorse being part of Health Pass pilot, which we know is being considered at the moment. It is important that part of this is there are considerations that have been kind of noted in the paper, but this is about a pilot that needs to be built on evidence base. And there are a few things I do want to kind of phrase that should be considered perhaps. And while the pilot considers, for example, in this, but whatever form a pilot takes, might consider specific industries, restaurants, bars, and entertainment venues. I know that retailers as well and others, and particularly small retailers and small businesses run by individual operators who are really hurting. And so considering them as part of a pilot and how that would work would be positively received. It's important to also recognize that staff that work within these sites are not necessarily vaccinated fully as well. So ensuring active access to vaccination, particularly when we're talking about groups of staff who might be in the lower age bracket that only opened in late August for them to be able to access vaccines, and some still unable to access those vaccines because of different timelines, but moving very quickly. It's how do we ensure that they don't get left behind. They're either supported with access to vaccines or supported otherwise, so they're able to continue either with work or having to look after themselves in the meantime. So this is because so many in our municipality are within that lower and age range as well. So very important to consider. I know I've looked at discrimination. I've looked at things around the important ways of, you know, that position for that this is not a permanent measure once we are in a point where vaccinations are there. So there are all those considerations which have been discussed broadly. And I think in its current simple form, this is about us being involved, but looking at every way possible to support the opening of if everything in the city and the City of Melbourne where possible, and those things earlier kind of opening in a safe and evidence-based ways and being part of that pilot, I'll be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Hakim. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this motion? Councillor Griffiths.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you to everyone who's spoken on this matter already. I hope that people who are listening to the debate tonight can see how much thought and genuine research everyone who's spoken tonight has put into the issue. I know we've all spent long amounts of time considering it. Councillor Dr. Olivia Ball pointed out that she wasn't a doctor. Well, I'm even, I think, less qualified than her to make health decisions. I did work in the same building as the health department for a while, but I'm well aware that through some of the documentation information that she's provided to us previously as councillors, that she brings a large amount of knowledge to the table. And I think it's fantastic that we do have a motion before us that we've been able to work cooperatively about bringing together. And that's important because we are in an environment which is, as I think Councillor Hakim pointed out, charged and fraught, and it's important to bring calmness and thought to the discussions that we're having. I really want to thank the people who've contacted me over the last week or two. I've got to say that I've had people very much in favour of the idea, and I've also had people who are not in favour of the idea contacting me, and pretty obviously in my vote tonight, one way or another, I'm going to be disappointing people. But I want to be upfront about that and make it clear to both sides that I've heard their opinions, and I'm going to be supporting this motion tonight because I think it is an important demonstration of what it is that we're trying to do as a city in moving forward to being vibrant and vital and alive again. And I hope that the state government works cooperatively with what we're proposing and the thoughts that have gone in from the nighttime economy advisory committee, you know, are listened to. But I guess I do want to pick up on one rhetorical flourish that has emerged a little bit in the discussion tonight, which is that the state government isn't listening, or that the state government hasn't listened to people who've had opinions on this matter. And I don't believe that that's the case, and I do feel the need to say that I don't believe it's the case. Just as I tonight will disappoint some people in the way that I vote, so the state government, I believe, has listened for the last 18 months, 2 years, to the variety of opinions that are out there about what the end of lockdown should look like. And they've made a decision which simply cannot please everybody. But the idea that they haven't listened at all, that their ears are blocked to those conversations, I don't think is particularly helpful. And I think it adds to a conversation which implies there has to therefore be other ways of making your voices heard to government. And when I see, you know, headlines in the Herald Sun along the lines of shutdown is all about control, not COVID, I think it just feeds into that, and that worries me because as a city, I want to assure all of our constituents, not just residents, not just business owners, but everyone who loves the area that we're part of, that we are listening to their voices and that we're acting in the very best genuine way that we can to ensure that the city becomes what we love. I don't doubt that the state government's the same. I frankly don't doubt that the federal government is the same either. And I think it's important that when we're using our language, we assure people that we're listening and not suggest to them that their voices aren't important or aren't being heard, even if they don't like the outcome of the decisions that we make.
Thanks, Councillor Griffiths. Are there any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Leavitt.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I support this as well, and I want to thank my colleagues who have spoken, Councillor Campbell and Chang, for moving and seconding this and framing the discussion for us, but also to the Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee for deliberating over this and making a recommendation to us. We owe it to them to decide what to do with their recommendation, and I'm happy to advocate to the state government on their behalf, or even better, endorse the Lord Mayor to do so. Thank you, Lord Mayor. I can do so with the caveat that's been added, and Councillor Ball has spoken to that, because I as well am not a health expert, and I do want to make sure that we're sending the message that while we come to the end of the world's longest lockdown, that we are all doing the best we can to demonstrate that we're singing from the same hymn sheet. The streets of Melbourne today are not the friendliest they've ever been, and it is the role of government to do what it can, I believe, at all levels to try and hold the show together for the next few months while we see compliance with public health orders more than just fray at the edges. We're seeing a lot of disquiet and some ugly scenes recently. Everything to what we've been seeing in the last couple of days with some right-wing protesters pretending to be unionists and so on. It's a difficult time to be a Melburnian. And so I want to pick up on what Councillor Griffiths has said. It's really a time for hope. And I want the City of Melbourne to be part of the solution within the health framework, within the roadmap that has been set out, bits of which I personally really, really struggle with. I wish the government had a bit more of a rationale for the curfew. I really want the curfew to go. I hate the curfew. But if we're all in this together and we're all about finding solutions and we're all about recognising that if we're going to get this city running again, we're going to have to trial, pilot these solutions as best we can. Well, we've got to listen to the advice that's coming to us and within the framework that's being set, do our absolute best to run with it. Because if that's the conversation we're talking about, the future of Melbourne that is open, that is safe, that is vibrant, that is active, that is how I think we get through to the other side of this lockdown without too much of the ugly non-compliance that was only going to lead to worse things. This is a city of possibility and a city of hope. And in that spirit, I will support this motion. Thanks, Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Leppett. Any other speakers to this motion? Well, look, I'm going to say something, of course, and Councillor Leppett actually stole one of my themes, but very good, we're on the same page. Firstly, of course, to say thank you very much to our Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee and their representation of industry and their efforts, aspirations and determination to keep making a contribution in the most challenging of circumstances. As to this motion this evening and what's been put to us from the Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee, I think I am full of admiration for the fact that in these circumstances, the committee wants to be part of the solution, reflects an industry where so many organisations want to put their hand up to participate in a state government-run trial to really, again, in representing the industry, test systems, procedures and technology so that they can be least burdensome on business and make sure that as the city reopens and as they are able to open their doors again to patrons and customers, that's a system that is as effective as possible based on their feedback and their testing. I'm just full of admiration for those organisations. And I'm so pleased that what the Nighttime Economy Advisory Committee is doing is providing that connection between willing participants in our local economy, that connection into state government so that people who want to can participate in this trial Well done, and I hope that the offer is received and acted upon, and I'm looking forward to being to advancing that offer through this advocacy. I'll be supporting this motion. To the vote now, all those in favour, please raise your hand. It's unanimous. Fantastic. We can declare that motion carried. Thank you, everybody. That concludes reports from management to be considered in open session this evening. And there are no items for of general business for consideration in the open session. Councillors, are there any items of urgent business you'd like to raise now? None? Thank you. As we've received no questions from the public to be considered at the end of this meeting, it means I'm going to call on a councillor to move the motion that will come up on the screen now to close the meeting to the public so that we can consider the one item of confidential business this evening. I'll move that. A councillor to second that, please. Councillor Griffiths, thanks to you. Is there any opposition to this motion? No, then I'm going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Unanimous, so we declare that motion carried. Thank you to all the members of the public who've joined us this evening and to those who've participated. And I am thanking you.
Recording in progress.
And attendance, and we're declaring the open meeting closed at 7:35. Thank you.